Okay, picture this with me for a sec, right? It's the 1960s Cold War, tensions are high, and somebody hands you the keys to a brand new Renault. But here's the kicker. It wasn't built in France, no sir. This Renault rolled right off the assembly line in, get this, Bulgaria.
A Bulgarian Renault, huh?
Yeah, the Bulgarno. Quite a story. And today we're going to take a deep dive into it, see what we can learn about this automotive oddity.
Sounds fascinating.
Oh, it is. We've got a couple of cool sources to work with. A great article from a Bulgarian car magazine seems pretty legit. And then, of course, the always reliable Wikipedia page on the Bulgarino itself.
Classic combo.
Right. Always a good starting point. So, what we really want to figure out is first, how on earth did this even happen? Like, Western car company, communist country, Cold War, you'd think they'd be, a tad bit busy facing off to be making cars together.
It does seem like an unlikely partnership, that's for sure.
Totally. So let's get into it. Where did this whole Bulgarino thing even come from?
Well, it all started with this Bulgarian state enterprise called, get this, Bullet.
What?
Catchy, right?
Bullet, okay.
Yeah. And they teamed up with another state-run group called Melikim. And here's where it gets interesting. Melikim, they were in charge of the, wait for it, military factories.
Hold on, military factories making cars? That's a new one.
Yeah, kind of shows you how things worked in those centrally planned economies. Like, whatever the top brass decided was a priority, bam, resources went there. In this case, they decided Bulgaria needed its own car industry.
Right.
And they weren't just eyeing Renault, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, seems they were shopping around a bit, checked out Fiat, Simca, even Alfa Romeo was in the mix.
Huh. So why'd they end up going with Renault in the end? Was it like reputation, or maybe Renault had some tech they really wanted?
You know, that's a good question. And the sources we've got, they don't really say. But there are a few possibilities. Maybe Renault offered a sweeter deal, on price, or maybe they were willing to share some of their know-how with the Bulgarians.
Makes sense.
Or, could be, there was some political angle we're not seeing. Or, heck, maybe Renault just had the right cars for Bulgaria at that time. It's a bit of a mystery.
A little mystery is always fun, keeps things interesting. But even once they had Renault on board, sounds like things didn't exactly go to plan, am I right?
You're catching on. So the initial idea was to build the Renault 4, the 4L, the classic kind of a workhorse car. But that got switched up, and they ended up rolling out the Renault 8 as the, of course, Bulgarino 8.
Interesting. So why the change in plans? Any idea? Maybe parts shortage? Or perhaps the 8 was just selling better overall?
Hard to say for sure. Again, our sources are a bit quiet on that front. But going from the 4L, which is pretty economical, to the 8, a bit more upscale, that does make you think.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe the Bulgarian government wanted a car that had a bit more, pizzazz, a symbol of progress, modern times, all that. Or maybe Renault saw a chance to, well, make a bit more money by pushing a higher-end model.
Almost like a chess game, Every move influenced by economics, politics, who knows what else.
Absolutely. Every move matters. And speaking of moves, it's kind of cute. They decked out the early Bulgar and 08s with these tricolor ribbons, like right on the windshield, with Bullet written on them. Little touch of national pride.
Aw, that's cool. Not just building cars, building a national brand, an identity. I dig it.
Exactly. And they had big plans. By 1970, they were aiming to crank out over 10,000 of these Renault 8s a year. That's ambitious,
Yeah.
especially for a country that was just getting started in the car-making game.
Yeah, no kidding. So where were they building all these Bulgarino cars? Did they have like a dedicated factory, or were they just using whatever space they could find?
They actually went all out. Started out in a temporary spot, but then in 1967, bam, new factory in Plovdiv, built just for the Bulgarinot.
Plovdiv, that's one of the oldest cities in Europe,
You
right?
got it. Tons of history there. And this factory was a statement piece. Top-of-the-line equipment for welding, painting, all that. A cool $15 million investment. They were serious about this car thing.
Sounds like it. So, were they just assembling parts that got shipped in, or were they actually making stuff locally in Bulgaria?
Good question. It seems like they started out relying heavily on those complete knockdown kits. Basically, all the parts boxed up, ready to be put together. But the idea was to gradually shift towards using more and more parts made right there in Bulgaria.
Makes sense. Less reliance on imports, more jobs for the locals.
Exactly. Classic strategy for growing your own industries.
So we've got the fancy new factory, big production goals, the move towards making more parts locally. Sounds like the Bulgarino was off to a pretty good start. But we know it didn't last. What happened? Why did it all come to a screeching halt?
That, my friend, is the million-dollar question. At our sources. Well, they're a little tight-lipped on the specifics.
Yeah.
And it really makes you wonder, doesn't it? Why'd they pull the plug on the Bolgarino?
A real head scratcher. What do you think? Was it politics? Money troubles? Did the cars just like not hold up?
My guess is it's probably a mix of things. You gotta remember the context here, right? Late 1960s, things are starting to shift in the Eastern Bloc. The relationship with the West, it was always kind of, delicate.
Oh, for sure. You had the Prague Spring, and then there's all this dissent brewing. Maybe the Soviets got nervous, saw this whole Renault thing as too much Western influence creeping in.
Could be. They might have worried about, like, not just technology, but ideas, too. Bulgarian workers getting used to a different way of doing things.
Yeah, that makes sense. But politics aside, gotta think about the bottom line, too, right? Well, people actually buying these Bulgarino cars.
Well, here's the thing. Owning a car back then in Bulgaria, that was a big deal. Not like today where it's almost expected, you know?
Totally different world.
Right. Back then, a car was a luxury, even in the West. But in a socialist economy where the government's controlling wages and all that, having a Bulgarino, that probably meant you were doing all right.
So like a status symbol.
Oh, absolutely. Imagine rolling up to like a gathering or something in your shiny new Bulgarano. Talk about neighbor envy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I can see it now. But hold on. Even if not everyone could afford one, they were still selling them to other countries, right? Yugoslavia, Austria, even some places in the Middle East, from what I remember.
That's right. The Bulgarino, it did have some international reach. And that's another thing that makes its sudden end so strange. They had a modern factory. The cars themselves weren't bad. What went wrong?
Well, the Bulgarian magazine, it does go into some detail about the Bulgarino 10, which they were making alongside the 8. Maybe there's a clue in there somewhere.
Good thinking. Yeah. They actually do a pretty good comparison with the French Renault 10. Same engine, 1108cc, 50 horsepower, 4-speed manual. Mechanically, they were pretty much the same.
So no glaring flaws or anything.
Doesn't seem like it. But they do point out a few design choices that, looking back, might seem a bit, well, odd. Like the rear windows.
What, were they those little pop-out ones?
Nope. Sliding windows. The ones that move sideways, you know. The article even calls them archaic, not sealing well all that.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine all that wind noise on the highway.
Probably. But hey, it was the 60s. Things were different. Still, kind of cool how a little detail like that gives you a peek into the technology and design thinking back then.
It's true. And it shows the Bulgarino, it wasn't just some, like, thrown-together knockoff. They were paying attention to detail, even if some of those choices, they didn't exactly age gracefully.
Right. And remember, this was still relatively new for Bulgaria. They were learning as they went, working with Renault, but also trying to do their own thing.
And speaking of doing their own thing, what about that whole fiberglass body experiment they did with the Bulgarino 10? That's pretty wild. What was the thinking there?
It's a curveball for sure. The sources, they kind of threw out a few possibilities. Maybe it was a cost-saving thing, or maybe they were looking into, like, alternative materials.
Oh, yeah. Maybe trying to reduce how much steel they had to import.
Could be. Or, hey, maybe they were just messing around, seeing how fiberglass would hold up in the real world, whatever it was. So they weren't afraid to, like, try new stuff.
Makes you wonder, what if they'd had more time? Could they have turned Bulgaria into, like, a fiberglass car hub?
Now, that's an interesting what if.
Yeah, but sadly, that's not how things went down. Production ended in 1970, and like you said, the sources don't give us a clear answer as to why. But taking everything into account, what do you think? Was it more of a political decision to shut it down or an economic one?
It's tough to say for sure. Could have been pressure from Moscow, you know, worries about Western influence or being too reliant on Renault, or maybe it just wasn't making financial sense in the long run.
Maybe the demand wasn't there or the costs were too high or who knows, could be a little bit of everything.
Exactly. It's like a historical puzzle and we're missing some pieces.
But that's part of what makes it so interesting, right? Even in a planned economy, things don't always go according to plan.
Truth. And it challenges how we think about what those economies could do, both in terms of innovation and, you know, working with companies from the other side of the Iron Curtain.
Before we move on, there's one more thing I wanted to touch on. The Wikipedia page, it says the Bulgarino 8 cost 6,100 leva and the 10 was 6,800. Any idea what that would be in today's money, just to get a sense of how expensive they were?
Unfortunately, the sources don't give us a direct comparison. But they do make it clear that these cars were a big investment, even for folks who were relatively well off. It wasn't like a car for everyone.
So almost like the Bulgarino was stuck in this weird in-between spot. Too pricey for most Bulgarians, but maybe not special enough to really compete on the world stage.
Yeah, it's a fascinating dilemma. And it makes you think, could they have found a way to make it work? You know, if they'd had more time, maybe build up the brand, improve how they made the cars.
It's a question we'll probably never know the answer to. But what do you think, listener? Could the Bulgarnaut have overcome those challenges and become a real player in the car world? We'll explore some more of those what-ifs in the last part of our deep dive. Well, we've been digging deep into this whole Bulgarnaut story, and it's been a wild ride. Cold War intrigue, industrial ambition, and a car most people have never even heard of.
Yeah, even though it was a pretty short-lived thing, ending back in 1970, there's still so much to unpack.
Totally. Like opening up a time capsule, you know? We get to see Bulgaria's dreams, how they were trying to make a name for themselves, and how complicated those East-West partnerships were back then.
And for car nerds like us, it's a chance to geek out over this totally unique piece of automotive history.
You know what really stuck with me? Those little tricolor ribbons they put on the early Bulgarno 8s, the ones with bullet on them right on the windshield.
Oh, yeah. Gotta love that. Such a small thing. But it says a lot about the pride they had in this project. They weren't just making cars. They were building a brand, something for Bulgaria to show off to the world.
I wonder what those people who worked on the Bulgarno would think if they knew we were sitting here talking about it all these years later.
I bet they'd be proud. They were part of something special, something that really pushed the limits of what was possible back then.
Absolutely. And even though the Bulgarno didn't become the global success they maybe hoped for, it definitely left its mark, a legacy of innovation and ambition.
For sure. And it's a reminder that even the best laid plans, sometimes things just don't go the way you expect, whether it's politics getting in the way, the economy taking a turn, or just the unpredictable nature of, well, everything.
It's a story that leaves us with more questions than answers, but I think that's okay. Sometimes the best thing we can do is embrace the unknown and just try to understand the past with all its twists and turns.
Well said. And hey, who knows? Maybe someday new information will come out and we'll finally get those missing pieces of the Bulgarno puzzle. But until then, we can use our imaginations, right? Think about what could have been and appreciate the ingenuity and determination of those who dared to dream big.
So to everyone listening, we'll leave you with this. The Bulgarno may have been a little blip in automotive history, but it's a blip worth remembering. It shows us that even when things are tough, people can still achieve amazing things. It's just that sometimes the road to success takes a few unexpected detours. This has been The Deep Dive. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and never stop diving deeper.